A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Respected viewers, assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's show where we will be talking about learning disabilities. With mosques, community centres being the focal point of education, we know that we provide majalis in Muharram and Shahr Ramadan, we have Islamic supplementary schools, as well as them being there for general religious guidance. The question I wish to pose today is, how accommodating are we of those people who have a learning disability? A learning disability affects the way a person understands information and how they communicate. It is said that in the UK, around 1.5 million people have a learning disability. This means that they can have a difficulty understanding new or complex information, learning new skills, and coping independently. It is thought that up to 350,000 people have a severe learning disability, and this is on the rise. Here with me to discuss the subject today are my two guests. My first guest is Sister Frizana. She is a mother of three, and by profession she is a learning disabilities nurse and a generic social worker. She has worked with people with learning difficulties and mental health and is a children's social worker. My second guest is Sister Nishat Bimani. She is a mother of a 12-year-old. She was a teaching assistant for 8 years, supporting children with a various range of difficulties, and has since moved on to become a math teacher. She's also a learning supports coordinator at the Shia Nasheri Madrasa in North London, as well as an assistant coordinator. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's show. So, Frizana, if I can start with you, what is a learning disability?
According to the Valuing People, which is white paper, a learning disability is when somebody has a significant reduction in their ability to gain new skills or to gain a level of understanding or new understanding. It in turn affects their ability to cope in general life, and it's usually where developmental issues are detected before adulthood. So basically it stays around for quite a while, and that obviously there is no level of change.
So when you say the white paper, I assume that this is something that has been commissioned by the government.
Paper, yeah.
Okay. And when they say that someone isn't able to maybe understand or comprehend as well as someone else, I assume that they then have surveyed or questioned or observed a range of people and then have been able to say...
Well, it's usually milestones from childhood.
Okay.
We all have milestones that we reach from childhood into teenage life and so on. And it's usually an observation of which milestones are met. So it's an average, you know, what average people are able to
achieve.
And it's looked at in that sense.
So you're marked against an average of other people. Nishat, any contribution?
I think learning disability is the incapacity of a person to be able to learn.
Okay.
Now, it's different from having a learning difficulty, because a difficulty is an obstacle in the way you learn.
Okay.
So you can be you can have a learning difficulty and not be, you know, disabled. But if you have a learning disability, that usually goes in with a certain type of disability that you might have that goes with it.
Okay, so when we look at, so if I'm looking at as a teacher, because I teach the GCSE, so somebody has a learning difficulty, does that mean that as a teacher I need to be able to comprehend different people's learning? What do I need to take into account when I'm looking at people?
I think you will have to know how that child learns.
Okay.
So if you think that they're a visual learner, then you need to provide facilities where they can learn in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So a learning difficulty is the way a person learns, not that they have a disability in learning, so they can't cope with any style of learning.
Okay.
So you'll have to find out the best way that they can learn and then, you know, provide the you make provisions for them.
Okay.
But it doesn't go to say that they won't be able to, you know, take in most of the things that are taught in the way that they can learn.
I see. Yeah. And a disability is something that is a naturally occurring.
Yes. Not necessarily natural. There are other causes of learning disability.
Okay.
But with a disability, you can't always learn new skills. It's a difficulty. You can learn new skills. You can learn ways around it. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Whereas in a disability, that likelihood is not there.
Okay, so I've heard the terms learning disability, learning difficulty, and an intellectual disability. But you've explained a learning difficulty, a learning disability. We've kind of, what's an intellectual disability?
It's the same. It's referred to in different ways, but it is the same thing as a learning disability.
Okay.
Because again, it's the inability to learn new skills, new ways.
I think the definition that the NHS gives is okay. that a person is intellectually less able if their IQ is less than 70. Mm. So okay. there's a measure for that, okay. you know. But it doesn't, like Fazana said, there's not. It doesn't mean that they won't be able to learn new skills, mm-hmm. you know. If you have an intellectual disability, uh-huh. that goes hand in hand with having a learning disability.
Okay.
Okay. So most people that have a learning disability will have a lower IQ anyway, mm. so they will be intellectually disabled.
Okay, I see. Now, with these labels, so if, for example, you are labeled with a learning difficulty or a disability, how does that, I mean, I'm not saying either of you have one, so maybe from your experience, does that affect someone's self-esteem or their approach to studying? Or, because if I was told, say, Nasser, you have learning difficulty, then I'd be like, oh, do you know what I mean? And I'd be like, well, I'm not expected to do well, so therefore I won't do well.
No, I wouldn't say so. I would say the support out there nowadays for learning difficulty and disability.
But you have to be able, you have to be willing to take that support in order, or first you need to accept that you have one, and then you need to be open to take it. And then there's obviously, then there's the stereotype that you walk around with as well. So, you know, we can only answer it generically, because...
But learning difficulty would be things like dyslexia. Okay. Now, if somebody has an ambition to do well, they mm-hmm. do want to learn new skills, they do want to progress, that learning difficulty is hindering their ability to progress. So they will want to find new ways, new routes to be able to learn and to be able to make that progression, to go further the way they want. And so they will use the resources available mm-hmm. and the services available that will support them to make that step forward. Whereas if you have a learning disability, you may have ambitions, but you may intellectually not want to go that step ahead. Does that make sense? For example, further education, there might be a level that you might reach that you might be happy with. Is that... Would you agree, or...?
In my experience, I think, because I work in a school,
yeah.
You see both sides of it. You see children struggling, and you know that there, you know, has to be an assessment and a diagnosis of some mm-hmm. sort. And you approach the parents, and the parents were like in total denial, or nothing wrong with my child, you know? But then you see the other side as well, where you say, well, I think if I have that tag attached to my child, mm-hmm. the support is there, and mm-hmm. my child will then progress and do better in life, given the support. So I think it's cultural as well, what you perceive of that diagnosis that's given to mm-hmm. An individual.
So difficulties are based on learning styles, and disabilities are then, are you born with them or are they diagnosed later?
They can be diagnosed later. You can have a learning disability from birth, which mm-hmm. could be oxygen deprivation.
Even before that, for example, the chromosomal and genetic disorders that can occur before the birthing process.
Okay.
So if you have, for example, Down syndrome is something that happens and there's no cause for it. Mm-hmm. So it happens at the time of contraception. So long before birth,
oh.
you know. So like Fazana said, you can have it before the birthing, you can have it at birth,
during
yeah. the birthing process, where you know the lack of oxygen and stuff. Yeah.
You could have an accident with a head injury that can also yeah. cause a learning disability later on in life, which is why the definition was given that a level of disability and inability mm-hmm. to understand and learn new skills before adulthood.
Okay.
Because obviously there are issues in adulthood such as dementia and things like that, mm-hmm. but
that's a different type of
that's a different situation. Yeah. That's obviously over time,
yeah,
and brain shrinkage and things like that. But because the definition says before adulthood, so any time during your life, you could end up with, you know, a learning disability, but most of the time it's observed in childhood.
The diagnosis is made later in life.
So, you know, with the chromosomal defect, and you mentioned that you can sometimes get things at conception, are there ways to establish if your child has a learning disability before the child is born?
Okay. With definition of a disability, it is always usually caused by an unknown factor. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Down syndrome, we don't know what causes it, but it happens.
Yeah.
All right. So there's no known factor for the disability.
Mm-hmm.
For example, dyslexia, which is something that you identify after, you know, preschool age, perhaps. We don't know what causes it. So the identification process is made, you know, once the child possesses or shows signs of the difficulties. There are tests that happen now during pregnancy where, you know, chromosomal and genetic disorders can be identified. So you've got the amnio tests that you do before. There are risks that go with it, of course, you know. But there are reduced risks now than there were before, you know. But there are ways you can find out if, you know, the child that you're going to be born with has any defects.
And, I mean, obviously, we know that if a child is it Down syndrome that you say that is from conception?
Yeah.
Then automatically, I guess, you would know when your child is born that your child has. How do you then diagnose any of the other ones? Is it something that...
It would be the milestones again. So, you know, social interactions, somebody that's autistic, there may be issues with social interaction, you know, within nursery and things like that. You might find that some of the children aren't walking when, you know, past a certain age, they're not walking. There's issues with swallowing. They're not swallowing. They're not talking at a young age. So all the milestones that we look at from 0 to 5 years, they would be considered. And even after that, there is, you know, further delay, obviously, later on in life as well. So I think, would you agree that's...
Yeah, I think it comes down... I think it's very difficult for the parents to identify because that time that the time the child is born until they start school, they're with the parents most of the time. Then they're not... Because the milestone, they haven't reached that milestone where they can do much at that point. You know, it's just like a baby. You know, they don't have many abilities anyway. But then when they start schooling, that's when, you know, people identify, well, this child cannot do this when the peers of the same age can. And that's when the diagnosis and identification process starts.
Obviously, here we have health visitors and other professionals that come home. You know, we have to go and take the children to the community centres for regular weighing and things like that. We have that availability, which is when we have help to, you know, pick up any issues that are there. With all the recordings that they do, they would check, you know, weight, eyesight, they check, you know, all kinds of things. And
are we not putting, I mean, you're talking about milestones and milestone developments and, you know, I usually on these shows, I always bring up the example of my nieces and nephews. And I find that when my nephew was growing up, we were always like, oh, when does he need to start talking by? And when does he need to start walking by? You're just growing up as a nation of paranoid people because it's like, by this he needs to have done this and by this. And alhamdulillah, it's a completely perfect child. But it was just like, I remember 1, 2, and now he's like, left hand, right hand, which one is he going to write with? And they're like, don't say anything to him. And I'm like, why? And they went, because he's still trying to figure it out for himself. And I'm like, oh my God, it's too much hard work. And I find that with all these checks, I think that, I don't know, I'm not a mother, but... You both asked, maybe you can answer these questions. You're not a nation of paranoid mothers because you're always sitting there going, have they done this yet? Have they done this yet? Are they supposed to have done
that
this yet?
That is a motherly instinct. I wouldn't deny that. You do. But I think it's more observation over a longer period of time. I mean, every child, I've got 3 children, they've all walked at different times, they've all talked at different times.
This is it though, isn't it?
You know, recent child is non-stop yapping from very early age because she had the other two older than her. So I think you give it a much longer, that's why they have the 0 to 5. The government have a 0 to 5 age where they all health professionals have to monitor children from 0 to 5. I mean, how would you
from my point of view, I think we here in the West are more aware of such difficulties.
Okay.
So, and that is why we're becoming a nation of, you know, paranoid mothers, because we know what's out there and what could affect our children.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, you know, the eastern side of the globe, there's not much that much awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So parents will not be, you know, all, you know, stressed out if their child is delayed in doing, you know, growing a tooth or, you know, walking.
Yeah.
Because first of all, the experience they get is from the tales that they hear from their parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's not from what they've been told, you know, what they've learned.
Or
you
the
know,
literature or, yeah, that we get that, swamped with.
Exactly. You don't have health visitors there telling them, oh, your child should have done this by this age, or they should have weighed this particular weight by this age. So I think because there's more awareness here, parents do become, you know, slightly stressed out if they think, oh, well, my child should have done that by this age. Now what?
Yeah.
You know? And the only, I think, like Fazana said, they are motherly instincts. Of course, we want our child to be progressing and developing in the way that they should do, you know.
Yeah.
And if we are aware, and if there is, you know, God forbid, a difficulty, then, you know, we want to be aware of it sooner than later, because then there are interventions that can be put in place sooner and make the life of that child better.
They're in a better situation. Yeah. And in your professions, both as teachers who have helped with children with disabilities, and both you as a learning disabilities nurse, a lot of this seems as, you know, we can put things in place to help the children. Is there any support out there to help the mothers? Because I assume that it can be, it's taxing on both. But one then becomes a carer, and one then becomes the person that needs the care. Is there support out there for caregivers?
From my profession, I'm also a social worker, so there is such thing as a children with disabilities social work team,
mm-hmm.
where a child that has a learning disability can be referred there, and they're given assistance in regards, you know, parents, if they're not coping, they can have carer coming home to assist with washing and dressing of a child and things like that, feeding, morning routine, and helping them get into school. Emotionally, there are counselling services that can be provided for parents as well. And as a nurse, again, when we go and do our visits to see the children, or the adults even, mm-hmm. because there are elderly parents that are caring for teenage people with learning disabilities, and it's, you know, it's our responsibility when we go and see the person with a learning disability whether the family also needs support.
Yeah.
And that would be from my professional point of view. As far as a parent,
I think there are interventions out there for parents of children with disabilities, and there are loads of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
It is then upon the parent then to have access, you know, do they want to access it, do they not want to. And I think the counselling services that Fazana said, most of these services that are there are for counselling, you know. There are others that are called the respite, where, you know, you have option of maybe sending your children away with, you know, carers, and mm-hmm. you have the time to relax, where you don't, you have that break of not having to full time look after,
or even just spending time as husband and wife, because sometimes that's put on the
absolutely. But then looking at the emotional side of it, I think there are networks, you know, you have to start networking with other parents who have, you know, children with different or similar difficulties, and you get to learn so much and you cope in that way as well, because you think, oh well, I'm not the only one. I know, you know, Fazana and I, we have a group of friends that we, you know, we get together and we talk about, not that often as we would like to, but then we get together and you know, we talk about
email and messaging each other to be able to provide support and know that there's somebody else out there that is going through what we're going through.
Yeah.
And it also breaks the stigma, I think, in the community. I think that's something that when we were growing up, I don't think we saw parents bringing their children with disabilities into communities.
Yeah.
It was quite a hidden thing. But now people are starting to feel more comfortable, and I think it's this networking and that, and supporting each other. And
so that is my next question. Where are we as a community in terms of supporting? I mean, you guys are saying that you guys have your own little niche, but is that your little network of WhatsApp and emails? Is that something you've self-created, or is it something that the community has helped create for you?
Self-created. It was self-created.
And now
I think we found there was a need in the community, and so, you know, we try to fulfill that gap.
So you fulfilled the gap because I guess you guys know each other. Are there potentially people out there who don't know that, you know, you guys have a network? Or
we've been quite open actually and asked friends to invite other friends. So even people that are not part of the Muslim community, mm-hmm. even Hindus and you know, to come in for a day and see what we do and what we talk about. Obviously it's just a couple of hours, maybe we'd have dessert and try and make it quite low key. Mm-hmm. And occasionally you get a parent that would actually start to discuss something. It's a very sensitive topic to discuss, mm-hmm. and it takes a while for the group to bond, mm-hmm. but you just need that one breakthrough. Yeah. And I think sometimes you have to not so much concentrate on the disability, but just be there for each other. Eventually, people will start to talk and you can start to share information.
Brilliant. So we're going to go off for a quick break, okay. And we will be back. To my viewers, I do hope you've enjoyed the first half of the show, where we have spoken about learning disabilities, how there is a stark difference between a disability and a difficulty, and the difficulty is about learning styles, whereas a disability is something where they're not reaching the same milestones as, I guess, the average population. So do join us after the break, where we will be continuing discussion about how we help support learning difficulties and disabilities within our communities. Welcome back to today's show, where we are talking about learning difficulties and disabilities and how we actually cater for them within our communities. Before the break, we were talking about support networks that exist and that, you know, people who know people are creating their own groups. So we're going to go back to today's discussion. So I'd like to welcome back my guests. So if I can come back to you, Nishat, we were talking about creating support groups and that how you guys have your own little network where you support each other. So let's take it a level higher now, because you guys are helping to provide for your needs as a community. I mean, you said in your bio data, I read that you are part of a madrasa supplementary schooling system. Are we accommodating for these learners? Because obviously as a center, both I as a teacher, as a speaker, I have a responsibility to make sure that I can impart knowledge on every person who is in my
Absolutely,
audience.
Yeah.
Are we accommodating? I mean, from my point of view, when I'm being told, okay, it's Muharram, you have to deliver a majlis, I go and I do it. But the thought has never crossed my mind that in that 40 minutes, yes, I have to cater for the 4-year-old to the 60-year-old, but I've never thought to cater for learning either a difficulty or a disability.
I think it is because people with disabilities mm-hmm. are the minority. So when we're going out there, you know, trying to teach a range of people in their ages, in their backgrounds, it doesn't ever occur to us to have to make provisions for children or adults even with disabilities. Mm-hmm. I think it is the parents more that are coming forward now. Any organization that I have known that have made provisions for kids or adults with special needs have done that because the parents of the children have come out and said, well, my child is part of your community, something has to be put in place. Yeah. It is always pushed by and geared by the parents themselves. And then the community is more than, alhamdulillah, welcoming and, you know, trying to get professionals to assist with. For example, you know, the Muharram Majalises. My daughter attends a Muharram Majalis. She's catered for, I feel, you know, because they will... The simplest things that you can do is perhaps, you know, if they're trying to answer something or if you're talking to them and you think, oh, well, that child is starting to show signs of understanding what mm-hmm. is being said and wants to say something with her hand up, do not discourage her by saying, by thinking, well, she might not say the right thing and, yeah. you know, she might make a fool out of herself, you know. Let her be,
yeah.
you know, and anybody in that matter, you know. Mm. And we do that for any other children. Why not children with? It's yeah. how we treat and how... what our perception of the person with a disability is.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think in the wider, you know, generally when we see people out there with a disability. So for example, I have a child with special needs and I know, you know, what the effects of it are. But if I, you know, on my way to work, you know, I'll go to the tube station and I'll see somebody climbing stairs and mm-hmm. not being able to do that because they have a certain type of a physical disability, I will think, oh, thank God, you know, alhamdulillah, I don't have that disability mm. and I don't know anybody with that disability. And I will also maybe say a little prayer for them, you know, yeah. you know, Allah, hope I, you know, that this. But I think that's where we stop.
Mm.
And that's it. I think people don't think that their responsibility lies in doing more than that unless they're affected directly
yeah.
by it.
And Fizan, any comments?
Well, I feel that mainstream population are able to be vocal and say, we want this, we want that, you know.
But mainstream population, I mean, see, I feel that, and I could be wrong, and you can correct me if I am, I think we react rather than being proactive. So as a community, the parents have gone, my child has this need, you as a community owe me, well, not owe me, but you're here to cater for me.
But you have to have the confidence to be able to speak in such...
But this is why I'm saying we're reacting. I mean, in the wider community, schools, government, legislation, that's what they're there for, yeah? But when you come to a community level, I find that unless the parents have the confidence, it is almost as if I turn a blind eye to this problem doesn't exist.
I mean, that's why I'm saying that the mainstream population outside of community and within the community are vocal and are able to say that in a majalis or at school or here, we want things to be like this.
But then
the somebody with a learning disability
place.
Isn't always, or even the parents of a child with a learning disability, aren't always confident to speak out. And this is where initially there was a lot of issues, but I think people now are able to speak out. They are being backed. There are things in the media that's giving, you know, a bit more hype to this topic, that's giving a bit more confidence to the parents than when we were at school, than when we were younger. And I think because other people are now understanding, the general population is slightly more educated than when we were younger. Now parents of children with learning disability are more confident to speak out and to say that we would like this, we would like that. And because of that, I mean, it's a two-way thing. Because of that, now in the communities, they are asked, what do you think we can do, you know, to make a difference to your child?
Do we have the expertise then to then cater for that?
I think there's the confidence, Fazana said, that parents have now is coming because legally there is a special needs law. You know, you have to provide for these children or adults with a disability. It is a law. It is a law. You're breaking the law if you don't, you know, provide for them.
Okay.
And that is where the confidence is coming from. So what do you do now? If you have children, you know, with difficulties, you have adults with difficulties, you are a community that makes provisions for everyone, including these children and adults. Yeah. It is your legal obligation to make provisions for them too.
Yeah.
Once it becomes a legal provision, you start thinking of things you can do for them, you know. So, do I need a therapist in my community to help this child out? If I do, I need to provide one for them. Do I need an educational psychologist to provide for these children or adults? Then it is my legal obligation that I do, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there are very many nations out there that don't have this legal obligation, and that is why they don't provide for, and that is why the parents don't have. So it's a really, you know, a circle.
Yeah.
Parents don't want to come out because they know they might not be supported because it's not legally obliged.
Bound, yeah.
You know?
So do you find that here in the West then, and I'm not quite sure whether there is a, you know, we used to say first world, third world, but I feel that now the world is just so small, like it's not as if we send smoke signals or pen pals or anything, you know, it's WhatsApp and, you know, we record a show here and it's being aired in another country. But do you feel that because we have this legal backing, therefore we are then, not through any choice of our own, but we've had to then be 10 steps ahead? Because when I've been to like other mosques, be it in Bahrain or in Dubai or in, you know, Tanzania, I'm just like, this is like mass catering.
Yeah, but it's like awareness as well, though. This legal, you know, the legal system has set a level of awareness. Media has obviously, because it's to do with, you know, legal, media has now got, you know, started to make provisions as well. And because of that, because of the awareness, I think the general public, or even people within the mosques, are realizing that they need to cater, whereas before they wouldn't have realized this because there was no awareness.
But for me, like, where it pains the most is we say legal, we say media, but boil it all down, we're all Muslims. And it's where is what Islam says.
But
Islam,
if you don't know that there's somebody with a disability that you need to cater for.
But it doesn't matter whether you know or you don't know. It is this.
It is our duty.
1.5 million people in the UK alone suffer with a learning disability. It shouldn't be for, even if there was one person who didn't have the confidence to come out, surely Islam is never, I mean, you look at the stories of Bilal and he had a stutter and yet he was a Muslim. Where are we? Like, I'm
too
like
busy in our own lives, I think.
Looking at it in the Islamic point of view, I mean, we have so many akhlaqi explanations and akhlaqi examples from the Prophet. Mm-hmm. You know, you said Bilal was a Muazzin despite having a stutter. You know, there are lots of people during Prophet's time, like Jalayb. I don't know if you've heard the story of Jalayb. Mm-hmm. He was blind and not very good looking, but Prophet, because of how what a good heart he had, he took his proposal for a, you know, in a very wealthy and a good looking girl's house, you know, and he got them married, because it's we have to keep our what we perceive and our prejudices on the side, and we have to look at what might, you know, they be able to do despite their disability. You know, and once we do that, and I think it is more of a reason for us to be able to make provisions for such people, because, you know, we don't want to make a hindrance in our community of that disability. If that disability is a hindrance to our community, it is our responsibility to go past that and look past what can be done.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at, oh, that person has that disability, well, they can't do this, so we'll just forget about it.
Definitely.
That fear of the unknown as well. What if I do something wrong? I try and go and help this person. What if I do something wrong? You know, what if I don't understand? I don't want them to feel even worse, you know? And it's that fear. That's what I mean by now people are more educated and they're more understanding. That fear, I feel, is now reduced, so, you know, and there shouldn't be an issue now with, you know, mixing. And
do you feel that we then empathize enough?
I think we're better. I think we're learning.
Yeah. We're better
we're still
now
learning.
Than we
were still learning, though. I think life is a continuous learning process anyway. And we can't say we've done anything.
Talking
we've
about it from the Muslim point of view, I think it is our basic akhlaq to have to behave in a certain manner with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, whatever their abilities or lack of abilities are, you know. Fazana said we're more aware now, and I think parents are coming forward and bringing, you know, their kids and, you know, children. We've got people in mosques, you know, quite old, you know, generation, and they come in wheelchairs to mosques. Mosques are making these provisions now. You know, we have the mosque that I go to is a 3-story mosque, and, you know, we have lifts in there, we have ramps now, you know. Mm. Before, we didn't used to think about such things, but we are now, because there's more of us that are out there and
provide a voice.
And I think there is more people are coming, like I said, people are coming forward, and there are more disabilities and awareness of disabilities, you know, and that is why people are forced to, even if they don't want to, are forced to think about.
And do we have, I mean, in your communities, do you have a long-term vision to cater for them? Does it, that they have people on the ground to say, let's keep up with A, the legal obligations, B, what disabilities are out there? See, I mean, I know that, like, do we have people that's, do you have people that sign, maybe? I mean, I don't know. I mean, are we catering? I mean, I'm saying that as a speaker, I've never thought about it. So, I mean,
as far as signing, I can say that the community that I go to do provide sign language service, where the lecture is signed. Mm-hmm. As far as the other thing is, with somebody with a learning disability, you don't want to have them separated. You want to integrate them. And I think that is happening now. It's also the fear that how will other children react if this child comes in? And now I think now the awareness is there that children don't react in any way. They are accommodating now because it's becoming the norm, whereas before it wasn't. So we've had a level of progression, And I think now it's got to the stage where people higher up that are organising things within the community are thinking about it, a bit more proactive than before, but I feel there is still a lot to do. There is definitely a lot more that can be done. I think just thinking about it is a good start, and that's as far as we've got, I think. And I think that the parents offering support, that maybe this is how we should do things in the community, and people listening to that from the community and saying, okay, we can be accommodating, we can try that. That in itself is a start, and I think we're still at the start. I think we've still got a long way to go.
Me, Nishat, you said that you have a daughter that has a learning disability. So, in that sense, how is her integration in the both? I guess how do you compare her integration both in the mosque and in her wider settings?
I think it's a three-way process. Mm-hmm. You have myself that is trying my hardest to make people aware of, you know, I have a daughter and she can do this and we have to provide for her. Mm-hmm. And then we have the person with the difficulty or the disability themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. Khadija is a very proactive person, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone at mosque knows her. I go in there and I'm, you know, you ask for Nisha, they'll not know Nisha. But you ask for Khadija's mum, they'll know Khadija's mum, you know. So I think it depends on how proactive that person themselves are. And the third one is where the community comes in, you know. I think if the parent and the child themselves, you know, do their utmost to ensure that, you know, they're doing what they need to do for the provisions to be made for them. So if I go to my community, I say, well, I have this child. She needs to learn to read the Quran. Mm-hmm. You have Quran classes, she needs to be accommodated for.
Yeah.
And they will have a teacher there, especially for Khadija, who can teach her to read.
In the right style that is required for her?
The thing is, you know, Farzana said we have stopped at where we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, we know that we have this responsibility, whether we do it in an Islamic way or because we're doing it because it's a legal obligation. The intention I don't care really about as long as it is made for. If so, we're thinking about it. That's where we're stopping. We don't have the expertise to then tell us how we can. We know we have to. The
so
how hasn't come far so far. I mean, there are, I coordinate a special needs department in one of the madrasas that I go to. So, you know, because I am a mother of a child with special needs, I have worked with people with special needs. I have a team who have worked with people with special needs. So we provide, you know, we try our best to provide it. The how only comes when we have the expertise, and I don't think we have it enough.
And are we doing something to change that, or are we just sitting on the fence and just waiting?
I think it's going to take a little while. There's a lot of there's a lot of things to consider when providing a service. The thing is, we're the organisation within a local authority. The way I work is very different to the organisation within a community. The politics, the way things work, the situation, the hierarchy system, all of that is very different. It's more structured, obviously, through a local authority. But I feel in the community it's not as structured. We're getting there, we're being more structured, and it's trying to to make changes. It's a much slower process. There's no level of authority in a sense that you come in and you say, well, these changes need to be made and that's final. Whereas in a local authority, that's the way we would work. You know, the law says blah, blah, blah. We must follow it. We have an obligation, like Nishat said, to obviously take into account the law, but you don't need to follow all the follow-ons from the law. So with law comes frameworks, comes like the white paper, there's a green paper. So they're all kind of documents that would help assist the local authority to provide the services that they need to provide, be it via nursing, via social work, via GPs, via other specialists. We don't have that
prepared
kind of system, obviously. It's a very different type of system. It's now, we need to build networks, we need to build panels higher up in our communities where we will have a level of authority and say, now, we're at this level, we're working in your interests. We need to start, you know, like, for example, people with learning disabilities, there are panels and steering groups where people with the learning disability mm-hmm. are on the panel and will say, you know, this is what we want.
Yeah.
So people within the panel will say, okay, well, we need to now accommodate for this. And it will go through a system. There is nothing like that in our communities at the moment.
But we'll get there.
But exactly. Inshallah.
Well, it's been, you know, a very, very insightful topic. And I'd like to thank both of you. To my respected viewers, I do hope you've enjoyed today's show. I know I, as a speaker and a teacher, have learned a lot in the fact that, you know what, rather than being reactionary, we need to be a little bit more proactive about catering for the needs of everyone, because we are all followers of a religion of Islam that treats everyone equally, and therefore under the equal rights we need to be able to cater for people so that we can disseminate the right amount of information to them. So I do hope that you have enjoyed today's show. Do join me for the next one. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.